All right, what's up, everyone? We got a special edition of Out in the Field today with my good friend from NJ.com, Yankees reporter Ramsey Miller. Ramsey, thank you so much for joining me today.
Good to be here. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, I've been better based off how the Yankees finished their season. And all this talk with Aaron Judge going to the Giants isn't making me feel too great. But other than that, you know, I'm just hanging in. How about you?
Well, I got some time coming off. I'm enjoying some time. The baseball season wears you down. And when you get old, it really wears you down. I still live between Philly, closer to Philly than New York. So I have a lot of long trips. But look, baseball season's fun. They came up short this year. The Astros clearly were the better team. I think if you're a Yankee fan, it's a humbling offseason or postseason, because in past years when they lost to the Astros, they were this close. And now the gap is much further away, and you saw that. So the Yankees have some work to do to catch the Astros, and with the Jubb situation out there, they could go a lot further away if he leaves.
Yeah, so I know you were just on the radio in San Francisco before this, so I appreciate you hopping in and getting into this before your off time and everything. So what's the tidbits with Judge? How are we feeling with the San Francisco situation? What do you think is going to ultimately end up happening here?
I think all factors are pointing that Judge goes to the Giants, from the Giants' end and from the Yankees' end. We can start with the Giants' end. Judge is from the Bay Area, about an hour and a half east of San Francisco, a little wee, no red light town in Linden. Grew up a Giants fan in the Bonds era. Rich Aurelio was his favorite player. Wore number 35 because of the old Giants shortstop. Loved the Giants. He's very loyal to his parents. Grew up in a Christian family. Feels like that he may want to give back. That's the best way to give back to his mom and dad, is to sign with the Giants. That said, the Giants are coming after him hard. They haven't had a huge signing since Barry Bonds. The small market Padres are outspending him, made the playoffs this year. The hated Dodgers have been winning the division every year but one for about the last 8 years or so, other than last year when the Giants won the division. They were taken out in the NLCS by the Dodgers. And I have a friend that is close to Giants ownership, recently met with them, and I hear that the Giants are going to outbid the Yankees for Judge, whatever the cost. I hear that they're also going to entice Judge, convince him that they're ready to win by getting a second player, maybe a third player. They're going to spend a lot of money to get Judge to go their way. On the other side of it, the booing, that didn't help. Yankee fans, it wasn't everyone, enough booed that Judge heard it. We all heard it in the stadium. That didn't help. The fact that Joey Gallo was just destroyed by Yankee fans this year. The fact that Aaron Hicks has been destroyed by Yankee fans. That didn't help. Judge is incredibly loyal to his teammates. When they're hurting, he's hurting. That hurt. The Yankees offered him 213.5 in spring training. He turned it down. What really stung is the Yankees came out and trumpeted their offer. Look what we offered. He didn't take it. We made a fair offer. That didn't sit well with Judge at all. I don't think he's forgiven him. Leaving the Yankees will not be easy. He feels loyal to his teammates. He's loved wearing pinstripes as much or more than anyone. It won't be easy to leave. But if you notice, for years, Judge had been saying, I want to spend my entire career with the Yankees. That's what I want to do. He didn't say that after the last game. And the last thing after the last game, something I'd never seen as a baseball writer since 1996, full-time, except for two hockey years mixed in. Before that, part-time with the Pirates back in the day. I was a backup writer. After Judge did his post-game interview, after game four at Yankee Stadium, it's well after midnight. I'm not mistaken. I think it was 1:05 in the morning. And I went up to Judge and shook his hand, wished him well. And then there was a line behind me of 10, 15 writers saying goodbye to Judge. This never happens. And Judge was responding, I'll see you down the road somewhere. Didn't say I'll see you in spring training. To me, everything I know from talking to Judge, people close to Judge, people in his hometown, sources within the Giants organization, all signs point that he's going to the Giants.
I think the thing you just said that really struck me was about the 10 to 15 riders saying goodbye and then not saying I'll see you somewhere. That's definitely eye-opening to me. I believe he also said that it'll be sweet when we get it done, referring to the Yankees team finally winning a championship, but he probably just wanted to balance it out a little bit. So it's definitely interesting to hear that. And the Giants, they have a lot of good components to land him, like you mentioned. There's a lot of things lining up, it seems like. And I don't like how the Yankees handled the situation before the year either. They made it, they spun it, they tried to spin it in his direction that it was a negative decision by him.
Yeah. The Yankees could have gone above and beyond. And they looked at it from a strictly, what does Judge bring to us on the baseball field, tied into past injuries. In reality, even before this year, when Judge was giving TV ratings for the 62 homer chase, the amount of jerseys that he was bringing in money-wise, the amount of season tickets, the amount of kids that you see in the stands loving this guy. He was the face of the franchise, the first face of the franchise, real face of the franchise since Jeter. And he was the next great Yankee who was looked up upon, squeaky clean image, and for good reason, because he's a squeaky clean guy who also is a hardworking guy. Was a leader in that clubhouse from his rookie season in 2017. You don't see that. And that Judge and his camp knew that the Yankees are promoting him on all the signs and promoting him on Yes and Yankee Judge and the Yankees, or Aaron Judge and the Yankees. But when it came time to pay him what he was worth, they strictly went to what he brought his first 5 years, injury-wise, and they kind of painted him as this guy that had been injury prone. He did have some injuries, but it's not his fault. It's bad luck when you take a pitch off your wrist. That's not a guy that's injury prone. That's not like Giancarlo Stanton that has a lot of chronic groin calf issue type things. Completely different. Now, Judge is a big guy, and he's probably not going to be able to play the outfield forever. They're stuck with Stanton's contract for quite a while. From what I hear in the Yankees organization, they're prepared to make him a very good offer, but they're not going to overpay for him. They're going to pay him what they think he's worth. Will they go a little bit higher? Yes. And what I hear with the Giants, they'll pay whatever it takes. Big difference.
Yeah, that's how the Yankees used to be, but now it seems like the tide's shifting. I have an interesting thought here. Do you think the Yankees could have handled this better and did like an Atlanta Braves type deal, like how they lock up the guys younger for like a contract that both sides would like, maybe like 2 years ago before all this stuff happened, something like that?
Yeah, they could have done something like the Padres did to Tatis. But at that point, 2 years ago, it was COVID season, and you're looking at the fact that Judge was in a stretch where that point, he missed significant time 3 years in a row. And I think they were like, let's see this play out. He had an incredible 2017, a good 2018. We haven't got over the top. Do we want to pay him Mike Trout money when we don't know what if he pay this money and he gets hurt the next 3 years? So they thought, we're the Yankees. If he deserves the money, we're going to pay him. He wants to be with us. We want him. We'll get it done. Well, what changed is that Judge had this incredible season. His feelings are hurt. And now hometown team wants him, I think, more than the Yankees want him. They're prepared to pay more. And I think there's a tugging to go home. Like I said, he's very loyal to his parents. Now his wife, who's from his hometown, is involved in this. I've heard that his wife reads everything, goes to games. I'm sure that hearing Aaron booed at the ballpark had to really sting. And, the small portion of Yankee fans that booed at games are going to be a little bit responsible if he leaves.
Yeah, I know. We had spoken previously about the stuff you put out about Gallo and Hicks, how he wasn't happy with their treatment. For those that don't know, me and Ramsey had some time in Somerset this year covering some minor league Yankees as well. So we got familiar there and we had some good times down there. And I'll probably shift to some of those questions maybe a little more towards the end. But with Judge and this Yankees team, I mean, if he ends up leaving, where do they go? Like, where do you see the pivot being?
That's a tough call. My guess is the Yankees are thinking, that there's two things that they could possibly do that could win over the fan base to soften the blow. One would be fire Boone, bring in Don Mattingly. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's going to happen. Boone has a new contract last year, has a couple years remaining. Hal Steinbrenner has been a big supporter of Boone. Will Cashman, right now Cashman's a free agent too, so there's nothing he can do. They have to decide what to do with Cashman first. I think Cashman's coming back, and then I think Boone comes back. But would Cashman try to sell that Mattingly could sell some tickets? Look, the Yankees are so driven by analytics. Boone is doing, I believe, a lot of what the Yankees want him to do, and I think that's is all directed by Brian Cashman. So I think that they're going to stick with that. And the other one would be to try to get Ohtani. And Ohtani signed a $30 million contract for next year with the Angels. That's his last year there. He's probably not going to sign with the Angels, from what I hear from a friend who works in uniform personnel with the Angels. And they wouldn't surprise me. You heard it here first. Don't be surprised if he ends up with the Red Sox.
That's a bomb that we just got that we're going to have to put out to the universe, unfortunately, because no one's going to really like hearing that. It's different Boston. But, yeah, he's not really Yankee material, I don't think. I think, like we've seen, he doesn't really favor his Yankees team. He had a chance to come to them earlier in the beginning of the process. He never was about it at all. It was all fabrication, it seems like. And that's interesting. Do you think they could look to someone for like a Brandon Nimmo, or maybe go for like a big name pitcher or something to soften the blow too?
I think they could get the Mets closer, Diaz. I could see that happening. And I wonder, when Verlander opts out, would the Yankees blow away the Astros? He's going to want to stay in Houston. He's comfortable there.
Yeah, he likes it.
Verlander's going to want to try. Verlander saw what the contract that Scherzer got last year. And now that seems to be the new trend for older players. Give them a ton of money for 2-3 years, which Scherzer got. And I think Verlander's going to want the same thing. I think the Yankees would have to outbid the Astros in years by one, and upbid the Yankees or the Astros in terms of average value. They could have got him last year. They could have traded for him in 17. And to me, those were crucial mistakes made by the Yankees organization, Cashman and company, in not getting Verlander in 17. He goes to the Astros. He puts them over the top. He's the, I think, MVP of the ALCS. He's a single reason why they won that series. If you put Verlander on that Yankees team, the Yankees probably, even with the Astros cheating, win the World Series in 17, maybe in 19, and maybe they win this year if they would have outbid the Astros. And if they would have gave him an extra year, maybe he comes here. And I think that the Verlander factor, maybe a little too late. It'll be 40 next year, but maybe that's a guy they could get.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a few swings and misses at him, like you mentioned, and they definitely should have converted last year. They definitely had a shot. It seems like they were going to get it done, and they didn't want to go the extra length. It seems they're just not willing to go above and beyond anymore, how they used to be like a few years back. Like, these last 13 years have been really frustrating.
Well, Hal Steinbrenner is not George Steinbrenner.
Yeah.
George owned the team and ran the team sometimes with his heart instead of his head.
Yeah.
There was good moves and bad moves. The Yankees have been burned with some bad moves with Ellsbury, some others. You can make a case that a lot of times during the Stanton years here that it didn't work out. Stanton had some home runs this year, but he hit, what, 211 or something like
he
that?
He was bad overall. Wasn't
yes.
good.
And was he hurt? I don't know, but he's always hurt.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Not a good defensive player. You can't play him at DH, or can't play him anywhere other than DH most of the time. He did play there one game in the postseason, two games, I believe. But to me, this organization could be going backwards for a little bit. Yankee fans are very spoiled. No losing season since, was it 91 maybe?
I think since I've been on this planet in 92, I don't think I've seen a loser yet.
91 or 92, might have been 91 or 92.
And they missed the playoffs, two or three times maybe during that stretch, if that.
And now they've made it every year since 17. And you look, if they lose Judge, most of the top position players out there are shortstops. They're probably not going to get a shortstop.
Right.
Because, look, they could have got Luis Castillo this year, who might have put him over the top pitching-wise, but they were not going to give up Volpe and Peraza. And that's
right.
The future of this team. That's what they're banking on being the next era here of great Yankee baseball. Volpe is not ready. Anthony Volpe went to AAA. I think he needs a little bit more time there.
Yeah.
And that said, they may have to go backwards a little bit. That's tough to sell to the fan base. But the Yankees did that in 16 at the trade deadline when they traded off Chapman to the Cubs and brought in Gleyber Torres, and they traded Beltran, and they benched McCann and played Gary Sanchez, called up Judge, and it ushered in this new era. And that may be the way it needed to go, because they could lose Anthony Rizzo. Rizzo is going to opt out of his contract, probably. If he does, it wouldn't shock me if he followed Judge to the Giants. Rizzo loves playing here, and I asked him about Judge after game 4 against the Astros, and he did say that he hopes Judge comes back. Too many people are leaving and going to other teams, and that was kind of a push, I think, to the Yankees, get this done at whatever the cost. But I could see him possibly going, not coming back here if he doesn't think the Yankees are going to win and he and Judge are tight. I can see him following them out there on maybe a 2-year deal for $17 million instead of coming back on the 1 year for $16. That wouldn't surprise me.
I know they have a good relationship. That's definitely been stated a lot. And Rizzo's also trying to win too. Like, his career is coming towards the end a little bit. Like, he's not going to want to sit here for a rebuild if Aaron Judge leaves. I completely understand that. I think ultimately he wants Judge to come back, and he does like his time here, like you were saying. And that would be the best case scenario. And I think it was interesting when you brought up the COVID thing in 2020, because that was like a weird time. Like, I wonder how things would be different if that didn't happen. That probably did throw off a lot. But still, they probably would have waited out anyway, because they did get burned by Seve and Hicks doing the extension. So maybe they were a little gun-shy because of that too.
The problem with Judge, the difference with Judge is that Judge sells tickets. Judge sells jerseys.
Yeah.
And he sells them at the rate that Jeter did. And Jeter, when he played, had Mariano and had other superstars in that era. Judge doesn't have that. Stanton isn't viewed the same way that the Judge is. Maybe it's because the hometown, homegrown. Maybe it's because he had his best years with Miami. Maybe it's because he's a quiet, more quiet personality. Judge is very private, but Judge interacts with fans differently. Stanton's a good guy. And it's been tough on him at times, and he's handled it great. But Judge has kind of been in this, I'm the face of the franchise by himself. Cole is there now somewhat. Cole hasn't had the breakout moment yet that truly embraces the Yankee fan like Judge had in that rookie year with the 52 homers, the home run derby, which is a huge thing for fans and kids. And then, of course, this year, what he did.
Yeah, that's a good point with that. So I want to go back to some stuff with the shortstops that we were talking about, because I think that's an interesting talking point too. But Peraza, Volpe, IKF, like, they played 3 different shortstops in the series in 4 games, like, just completely just kind of guessing, it seems like. What did you make of all the, like, shuffling at that position? And do you think Peraza should have gotten a chance earlier this season and just place IKF?
No, I think Peraza, if you look at his first 2 months in AAA, major growing pains. I think that you can't underestimate the value of those at-bats in AAA are so important. And to be honest, Boone told me the other day when I asked him about it, the thought of bringing Peraza up in September was just to let him be around the guys, get him a couple ABs, let him be a part of this atmosphere, and let him sit in the dugout for the playoffs, and that way he'll be better off for next year. The plan was to stick with IKF, who I think for the most part had a pretty good year. He had some glaring errors on easy balls that stood out.
Yeah.
And fans got on him. He's not a home run guy, but for the most part, he was a pretty decent contact hitter. Had too many errors, but he made some great plays. And when they changed in the playoffs, it was desperation. At that point, they're just, trying anything to look at their analytics and who might be able to. I think the first time Peraza started was against Valdez, who has a great sinker ball. And they thought that the Yankees thought that Valdez has a better shot of putting the ball in the air than Kiner Falefa, who has a history of grounding out. He hits more ground balls. And then playing Cabrera there, they're looking at getting another left-handed bat. And then when Hicks is out of the mix, that put Cabrera in left field. And then all of a sudden, Cabrera screws up a little bit in left field at times, and they put him back at short. I think Cabrera's future is probably, as a jack-of-all-trades, better utility infielder outfielder than Marwin Gonzalez or Kyler Wade, definitely, which they had the last 2 years. And I think that this year, this next year, I would expect that Kiner Falefa will go into spring training as the shortstop, and they'll give Peraza a chance to beat him out, similar to Jeter in 1996 with Tony Fernandez. If he beats him out clearly, I can see IKF traded at the end of spring training. Okay. If not, maybe Peraza starts the season in AAA and they bring him up at some point. I know that IKF, who I have a pretty good relationship with, is concerned that his time is up here. He grew up in Hawaii, loving the Yankees. He's loved this moment. And I think he feels that that some of his errors that he made soured his standing with the Yankees for good. He knows the Yankee fans are down on him, and that hurts him greatly. But let's face it, he was going to be a stopgap guy all along because you have Peraza and Volpe there. And to me, I don't know why the Yankees just didn't move Volpe to second base this year and get him some experience there. Every scout I talk to thinks that arm strength wise, he's better suited for second. If they're going to keep Peraza and Volpe, Peraza is the better shortstop. So I think that could be a second base shortstop situation, maybe like the old Tiger days of Trammell Whitaker. Who knows what's going to come of it, but they certainly have high character. They both have some power. They both have speed. And I think that's the next wave that we're going to see. That's going to be the kind of the glue of the team here in maybe next year, maybe the year after.
I agree with what you said about Volpe and Peraza, because I know Peraza is a great defender. Volpe is solid defensively at shortstop, but at second base, I saw him play in spring training. I know it's only spring training, but it looked pretty good. Like, I think he can play pretty well over there. If you have those two up the middle together, that can be a nice core building, as you were talking about. I think that it's a solid plan to do. Volpe's hitting really took a nice step this year. His speed's very underrated too. He's had like 50 stolen bases in the minors. Yeah. And I think the Yankees are going to try to start running more a little bit as they get these guys up. I think that can help a little bit. Peraza could run too. And it's really interesting to see what they're going to end up doing with these guys. But with that comes Gleyber Torres. Do you think Gleyber's going to end up getting dealt this year? And how close was that Pablo Lopez thing to actually happening?
I think close. I think Gleyber has been on the block for the last 2 or 3 years. Scouts, executives from other teams tell me that it can be tough to trade with Cashman at times because he wants the sun and the moon. They did make some trades this year. I think they went for it, but I didn't like the trades that Cashman made. Some of the ones they made, the Efrosh trade with the Cubs, giving up Wisniewski. I didn't like that trade at all.
I enjoy that either.
But Gleyber's situation, look, Gleyber, maybe Gleyber is the third baseman. Look, they have a lot of bad money on this team right now.
Yeah.
They're stuck with Donaldson next year at 23 and then a buyout for six. So they owe him $29 million next year.
If they cut him loose, that's what it would be if they decide to cut him loose.
They're not going to eat $29 million. He's going to be here. And he's untradeable unless you take a bad contract back.
Or a prospect attached.
They're getting a lot of money opening up. They're getting the money from Britain. Chapman's not coming back. If Judge doesn't come back, if Rizzo leaves, there's a lot of money that I think that they should invest in younger guys to try to get to the playoffs next year, of course. But I think you want to get the younger guys. And I think that it wouldn't shock me if the Yankees try to see if they can get swing a deal with the Padres and bring in Soto. It didn't work out there this year. Could the Yankees make a deal with the Padres to get Soto? It's going to be tough because the Yankees it's going to be tough to make that deal without giving up Peraza and Volpe, maybe they would give up one of them and Jason Dominguez. And I don't know if there's a match, but certainly the Yankees don't have any pitching that the Padres could use right away, unless you maybe give them Severino in the deal that they could have for 1 year. I don't know, but I think the Yankees will try. That's the type of player, a young guy who's making money that they can build with, that I think they would try to get.
That's an interesting concept. And you made a good point about Hayden. Obviously, I spoke to him and you did like that interview and stuff. So that's how it all began. And unfortunately, we weren't happy when he got shipped off to Chicago for Evros. I wasn't thrilled with Waldichuk either. And then Montas was also injured. So you made a good point. Like, all these guys they traded for ended up getting some type of injury too. Like, I know some of it's bad luck, but like, also at the same time, the trade deadline moves all turned out to be disastrous. Even Bader came in late. It took him a while to get going. That might be the best one.
With Bader, I asked a scout after the postseason. I said, did you see Bader? What'd you think? And he goes, he's very, very streaky. He goes, you watch him when he goes the other way. He can have some major slumps. He says, look, he has power, but if you look at the back of his baseball card, he's a 12 to 15 homer guy. He had four in the postseason. And I think the Yankees are thinking like, wow, this guy's going to be, he's going to be a 300 hitter or 280 hitters going to pop 30 homers. Well, that's not who he is. He brings a lot of energy, very good defensive player in center field, steals some bases. He's kind of like their new Luke Voit, the high energy guy. The fans are going to love, but I wouldn't expect him to hit 30 homers based on the season he had. But he's a building block that you have for a little bit of time here. Local guy from Bronxville, right up the road past Yonkers. So he's New York tough. He's not going to be fazed at all by the tough media, the fans. But they have too few building blocks right now. You mentioned some of the pitching. They gave up basically all their double-A, triple-A top arms to try to win this year. And yeah. I think the Efroth trade was an analytics trade that they looked at what Efroth had and says, boy, he would be perfect. We can fit him in that. He can get outs against the Astros. Montas had a lot of success against the Astros. We're going to get him and pitch him twice against the Astros, and we're going to take them down. But they traded for Montas when he was hurt. He had shoulder issues in July, and you know what? Maybe he turns out to be a good pitcher next year. But when you have a guy that was injured with shoulder issues in July, don't be surprised when he's not pitching in the playoffs or comes back and only can pitch an inning of relief.
We also know that he was terrible away from Oakland too. His numbers outside of the Coliseum were awful. ERA was in the fives.
Big ballpark too.
Yep, a lot of foul ground, as you know. And we know how Sonny Gray did not fit well here. Not saying he's like Sonny Gray exactly, but it looked like it, unfortunately, in year one. I mean, what did you think of the decision to put him in that Astros game and some of the other bad bullpen moves? Like, how do you feel about the mismanagement of the bullpen during the playoffs?
I think that's all analytics. I think it's a crime that they didn't use Domingo Germán.
Yes, Germán pitched
game two of a doubleheader. Right, the first game after the All-Star break was a doubleheader. I was at that game in Houston, those games, and he got lit up. And I think they just said, man, this guy is not a good match for that lineup. But I think he was their second best starter for the second half of the season, maybe behind Nestor Cortez. He was as reliable as Cole. He didn't have the blowups that Cole had. That said, maybe he's the third best. I would have pitched him. You're going to put him in that bullpen. You can't just say he's my length. That's what Boone said. He's my length. Meaning if Tyone gets knocked out in the second inning, well, you're going to put Clark Schmidt into a do or die situation where you need Clark Schmidt. Nothing against Schmidt. I love Clark Schmidt. He hasn't had the experience. You're throwing him in those situations. That's not the right move. And I think sometimes the Yankees, I believe they go too much with the analytics. They look at the matchups. Well, this guy has this lane here. This guy has this lane here.
Lanes.
Instead of managing with your gut, instead of managing with what it says on a piece of paper.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I'm happy you said that. I think a lot of fans share that sentiment too. Even a lot of people like in the media share that sentiment. Like the lane for Lou Trevino, Also, when not pitching Garrett Cole when he has 96 pitches, you're paying him all this money. You're not going to let him fight through it. And then Trevino's also been seen by the Astros before. That was like your fourth best reliever. They're familiar with him from Oakland. So that was not a good move either. I don't think they would have won anyway, but it's just in hindsight, it's still a bad decision.
I agree. I would let guys go longer, but the analytics will show that if Nestor Cortez has 6 shutout innings, it might show that pitches 75 to 90, that his ERA for the last 4 times was 5.2. So even though his stuff looks great today and no one's touching him, we can't let him go through that lineup a third time. Let's get him out of here and have his 6 shutout innings of football.
Ridiculous.
I'm not like that. It's
too much.
Before your era, even, I think my era as a kid in the 70s, it was a better era of baseball when Seaver could go out there and get 9. If you didn't get a run off him in the first or second inning, you weren't touching him. You don't see that now. And pitchers now, they'll give up 3 runs in 5 innings. I did my job. Well, look up 3 runs over 5 innings and see what that is for an ERA. Is it 5.40? That's not good.
No, it's not.
They go 6 innings and 3 runs. Oh my, you think they pitched a 2-hit shutout. But they're conditioned that way. They're not conditioned to go deep into games because nowadays you have so many guys throwing 100 miles an hour. You know, the Yankees want to have different relievers in the bullpen. You want to have that lefty that brings the different looks, maybe like a Lucas Litke, and you have a sinker ball guy like Holmes, and you have the flamethrower like Chapman, and all these different looks, and we'll mow them all down. Well, it didn't work out. In the Yankees bullpen, Michael King really hurt them. That was the blow that hurt them. Look, Chad Green hurt. Chad Green had some bad moments over the years. I can think of a couple regular season home runs that Altuve hit off of them that were crushing defeats.
Yep, I was saw one.
That said, losing King, losing Green, and losing Chapman to where he's at the point where you can't use him, and then Chapman quits on a team. I mean, Jesus, I don't blame the Yankees one bit for letting him stay home in Miami after he basically quit on the team. He wasn't making the roster anyway, but let him go to Miami for $3 million next year and play for a bad team and stay close to home, because that's his career is done for meaningful baseball, in my opinion.
Yeah, another loss is Marinaccio, too. That was a big one. He could have got some big outs. He had a great year this year.
Marinaccio really, I don't know if you talked to him last
year. I did speak to him once.
He's mentally tough. He's very mentally tough.
He is.
He was – somebody said to me in spring training, Marinaccio had a shot to make the team. He's not making a team. Hey, he and JP Sears made the team. And they both gave them a lot before Sears was traded. Sears had two or three good starts.
Yeah.
He's a little guy. Kind of reminds you of Nestor a little bit. Doesn't throw hard, but, man, he moved the ball around. Great location. Changed speeds. I think the guy did a great job. And there was an organizational depth guy that was thrown into that Montas trade. And just another guy that you could have. Look, nowadays you need 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 starters, and that's a guy that they lose that could have been maybe pitching next year in a middle relief spot start.
Yeah, I think the new arms coming with Gomez, Warren, and Beeter, at least you still have some talent coming through there, and Vasquez really impressed in the end of the year too, and then Johnny Brito might be good, so we'll see how those guys look, but they definitely took a big hit there.
I don't know if any of those guys are difference makers, though, and I don't know that any of those guys are potentially top of the rotation guys. There are guys that can maybe pitch in a rotation at some point that have good stuff that they all should get a shot in the big leagues, and you never know when someone breaks through like Nestor, but they're sure things to be in potential 2-3 starter in the big leagues. They traded all those double A triple A guys.
Yeah, I mean, Waldichuk has a high ceiling still. I think we saw a little bit what he had. Hayden had some really good moments with the Cubs. They're both going to be starting next year in the rotations for sure. So we'll be watching for a while to see what could have been maybe, and we'll see how we replace them, I guess, in essence. But I want to go back to Ron, actually, because there were a couple times this year I think he got sent down and just wasn't justifiable based on how he was pitching. Like, how do you feel about the juggling with Ron? Because I felt like he deserved a shot to pitch on the roster the whole year.
That's all a roster crunch situation, similar to what Michael King went the year before. And what it comes down to is they're looking at Marinaccio and they're saying, okay, this might be a guy that we can need for the playoffs. But right now, if we get three or four guys hurt, if we keep Marinaccio, we're going to have to DFA Wandy Peralta or Lucas Lickey, and they're going to be picked up, and there's one less guy we have in the organization to deal with another injury or two. So Marinaccio having options for regular season baseball, when you look, the Yankees were way ahead of everyone. They were protecting assets to say we can withstand injuries going forward to get through the season. And whereas to keep Marinaccio, they would have had to get rid of somebody who has no options. Lucas Lickey would have probably been the guy. Or someone like a Castro. And they did not want to give those guys up. And if Marinaccio goes to AAA and gets some experience and still pitches, if he comes back up when there's an injury or two, okay, at the end of the year, Marinaccio positioned himself. Look, the last ALCS, Lucas Lickey was not on the roster, but they wanted to protect that asset. I get that. It hurts the player. King went through that last year. Clark Schmidt a couple times this year.
Yeah, Schmidt's another one, yeah. Yeah, so how do the players deal with that from what you've experienced? Like, how do you think that affects them? Because that have a negative long-term effect, potentially?
No, they're young kids. They realize that they're in the Yankee organization. It hurts, but they've seen this happen to other people, and you come up and you get to the point where you don't have options or you pitch your way to stay here. Michael King pitched his way to stay here, and Marinaccio probably will next year. But yeah, he was a rookie this year. He went through a heck of a stretch. He's going to have some rocky times at some point. I don't think we're going to go through Marinaccio's career and see him have 28 outings where he gives up one run. I mean, everybody goes through stretches like that. He had some issues with walks at times. But that said, you know, the kid from Jersey, Toms River, New Jersey, came up here mentally tough and gave the Yankees a lot of good innings. And when that bullpen, even with the injuries and even with some postseason struggles, when you ended the regular season, I think they were number two ERA in the league behind the Astros. And Marinaccio was a big reason for that.
Yeah, and I think another thing, I'll challenge one part of this. So, like, why did they have Albert Abreu on the roster instead of Marinaccio, though? I thought that was kind of foolish. Like, they tried to recapture Albert Abreu. Like, I thought that was a little bit redundant to me.
No options. They loved his arm. They didn't want to get rid of him. They had to get a second catcher for Trevino. And if you look at Albert Abreu's stats this year, they were pretty good. They weren't as good as Marinaccio. But again, it comes down to we lose that arm. If we keep Marinaccio, we're DFAing Abreu or we're DFAing Lucas Lickey probably. And when it's June, July, August, September, whenever the Yankees are 15 games up, 10 games up, at this point, let's get to the playoffs. We want to get through the season because we've seen stretches where the Yankees can have four or five guys hurt at one time. And the last thing you want to do is have to be forced to bring up Devi Garcia and use that because he's on the 40-man and that's all you got.
Yeah, that's another thing. Garcia, unfortunately, is taking a couple steps back. Who knows if he'll ever even get back up to the majors in a significant role.
He was swimming like Michael Phelps backwards.
Well, yeah, I guess I didn't go too hard there. A couple's being a little bit kind, I guess. But, I mean, he's still young enough that maybe they can figure it out. But, no, it's not looking great. He has some nice flashes in Somerset, but that's AA. So I see exactly what you're saying with that, realistically speaking.
Scouts that I talk to say that the Yankees took away his out pitch. He had one of the best curveballs. The Yankees analytics people, their people changed him to being a fastball slider guy, and it's a different delivery. And they tell me he doesn't look anywhere near the way he used to. You're talking about a guy who's a very smallish figure, stature that the Yankees are were for a time thinking, well, maybe we have our next Pedro Martinez here. And in reality, from what scouts tell me that know a lot more about pitching than I do and see him in AAA, they think that he's not going to be anything. That's what I hear. He's still young enough, and I think he probably needs to change the scenery at this point and new pitching coaches and go back to so he can have a fresh start and go back to what he does best, and that is throwing that big curveball.
Okay, this is actually a good talking point you gave me because this is not the first pitcher they've done this with. I don't understand why this team is so persistent on forcing these guys to change things that work for them. Like, you look what happened with Sonny Gray and all the miscommunication with that. Jordan Montgomery talking about the fastball, not throwing it enough, and then you see him do better with St. Louis and all that. Like, why are they so against going what works for certain guys just because they want to be right on what they want to do? Like, it's just, it's really frustrating sometimes to see this happen.
Yeah, they have their pitching philosophy. They have their statistics, their analytics, and they go by what they think is the best method. It works at times. There's been instances where it worked.
It does work. Yeah, it does
work. I mean, I don't know how much credit they deserve, but Nestor Cortez certainly is went from someone that was an afterthought, organizational depth, to being, in my mind, one of the top pitchers in the National League this year, who is what a job he did, and you would never expect that him, and this is 2 years in a row. So ever since he's come in that rotation, but I hear you. It's a tough call because, and keep in mind that what you're seeing work in Double A, the Yankees are projecting is that fastball that he's throwing by that Double A third baseman and getting three extra strikeouts. Is he going to throw that fastball past Rafael Devers?
That's a true point. I'll give you that one for sure. I was kind of looking more at it. Miller gets one. I'll say I was looking at the major league level too. But yeah, I mean, you can't really compare the Double A stuff. And the same thing with Matt Garvin's, right? They have him swinging off. They said his bat velocity was the same off batting practice pitching, so they thought it would translate to the major games. But no, that's not the case. He's hitting against minor league pitching and batting practice. Like, we don't know how he's going to perform with the lights are on October. And that was terrible. Do you think they stuck with him too long, or
stuck with him at all? One of the players told me after the game he still had a broken foot.
Wow.
And desperation. And he should not have been on the roster. Wow. And you're looking at what Carpenter did in May, June, and July, and half of August. Amazing. Look, this guy was done for his career. And he redid his swing last year, home in Arlington, Texas, or Fort Worth, where he's from. He signs with the hometown team, doesn't make the roster, goes to AAA, does well, opts out, goes to the Yankees, and he's putting up Judge numbers. Look at his OPS.
It was higher.
Like, yeah. Yes. And he gets hurt, and he doesn't swing a bat. Basically, he doesn't have a meaningful bat in 70 days, and you're going to throw him in against Cleveland and Houston, the best two pitching staffs, and you wonder why he's rusty? I mean, that was insane.
But I agree.
That was their, they were desperate at that point. They looked and said, all right, Carpenter, maybe he can get a good swing off, and it's better than putting Marwin Gonzalez out there. They were at that point in complete desperation mode, knowing that this was a terrible matchup against the Astros. They knew this was coming. I don't think they thought they're going to get swept, but they knew. It was a different feeling going into that series. A different feeling coming during the series, that they knew that they were running into a team that I think might be the best team in the big leagues in the last 10 years.
Wow. Well, we'll see what they do in the World Series and stuff. And we will get to the World Series a little bit, like I said, but the Carpenter thing, yeah, he looks lost up there. He's swinging over these breaking balls. His first pitch, the best pitch he's getting, he's looking at, and he's taking horrendous swings because he hasn't played in so long. It's kind of an unfair situation to put him in, but to your point, they had no one else really, so it was just not ideal. You could tell he didn't seem right still. Like, the foot was definitely a factor, like you said, obviously. The fact that it's still broken and he played, it's crazy.
Well, what killed the Yankees' chances of making this a competitive series was not having a healthy LeMayu and a healthy Benintendi. Mm-hmm. If you put Benintendi in left field and you put LeMayu at third base or second base, LeMayu, the good LeMayu, LeMayu,
yeah,
the healthy LeMayu.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have Kiner in there at short and you have three guys that can spray their ball around.
Oh, yeah.
It helps Judge a lot. It takes away pressure from Donaldson if he's in there, or Glaber if he's in
right there,
or Stanton. And basically Judge was on this island by himself. And during the regular season, he laid off a lot of pitches, took his walks, even when he was going for the 62 homers. But in the playoffs, when it was basically Judge and Judge alone, I think he expanded the strike zone some.
Yeah.
And he ended up having a terrible postseason at the plate because I think he was trying to do it all by himself. That's typically not how he does things. Look, in this era of analytics where the Yankees trumpet the season that Stanton and Rizzo had, hitting 30-plus homers, hitting 210, Judge hit 62 and hit 311 or 309 or whatever he ended up with. And nobody does that. And Judge cares about batting average. Nobody cares about batting average nowadays as a slugger. And Judge, it's really important to him. You talk to him, he'll tell you, I want to be like Miguel Cabrera. I want to be like the St. Louis Pujols. I want to hit 330 and hit 50 or 60 home runs. Nobody else cares about that. He does. And that's why you see him laying off pitches and taking his walks and why he had a lot of walks, but he also hit 300. That's something that you don't see. Judge is an intelligent hitter where when he was early in his career, he was more of a slugger. He got better. And that's a presence in the lineup that if he leaves, they're really going to miss that because he's more than a guy that can hit the ball at the ballpark. Even when he's going bad, takes his walks, steals bases. I think he was second on the team in steals. I think he was caught stealing once. Plays a way better outfield than people. In fact, Rizzo told me after the game the other night, it's beyond him how Judge was not a Gold Glove. And I agree. And Boone thinks it's because he played too much center field. Well, regardless, he could have been a Gold Glove finalist in center or right. I mean, the guy plays sensational outfield. I mean, he's fabulous. I mean, I was on the Giants radio today telling him, look, I grew up in Pittsburgh. I watched Bonds for 6-7 years. And then I watched some of the Giants. Bonds was a very good defensive left fielder. Judge is doing it at right field with a better arm. Judge is taller, jumping over fences, diving. He's an ultimate five-tool player. And you don't see that from a 6'7", 270 pounder. And I just wonder if he leaves, what is his Yankee legacy? You know, they come back next year on opening day. The Giants come in on opening day.
I know. What's the sad irony of that? Everyone's thinking about
if he's a Giants uniform. Is he booed?
I asked can't. Right no, that. I don't think so. I
was told.
I don't know. Somebody I would told, say no.
Well, I was asking the press box the other day that question, and they said it would be mixed on his opening bat, and he'd be booed everyone after that. And it'll be interesting to see if he leaves, how this is spun. Are the Yankee fans mad at him for leaving, or do they blame the Yankees? I think that they'll blame the Yankees for not getting this done earlier. Mm-hmm. But it will be, boy, that'll be a hell of an opening day if Judge is there. And
not the way we want it to be.
I mean, who knows? Maybe that tug of a loyalty that Judge has to the Yankees, maybe they can get something done. I don't expect them to, but that said, if he goes home and comes back, wow, what an opening day.
Yeah, I would clap for him though, definitely. I wouldn't boo him. I mean, I can't after everything that's happened. I mean, I would definitely place him more in the organization for him not returning if that's the case that what took place. I mean, it's a business. He's got to get his, he feels a certain type of way, and the Yankees don't match the offer. And fortunately, it is what it is, and they're going to have to recover from it somehow.
Matching the offer may not get it done though. That's the thing. There was a time where Judge, the Yankees match, or maybe he gets a hometown discount. I think now, I don't know that matching will be good enough. I think if it's even, I think he's going to San Francisco.
Wow. Well, that's even worse, but we'll have to see what ends up happening, I guess. Now let's circle back to some stuff with the infield. And I want to go through this Donaldson situation, the Hicks, and getting this money off the books. Like, do you think there's any way they can get creative and attach some prospects to get rid of them? Like, do you think that's a mindset? Do you think there's any way that one of them goes and they keep the other? I'm just curious because they both seem like blocking spots that shouldn't be on the roster. Also, I know JD, I don't think he'd be the best bench warmer. Let's put it that way.
Well, maybe you can start a poll, get some fans to collect money. And if you can come up with $29 million, maybe the Yankees will DFA him. He's owed 23 for the contract, 6 for the buyout. They're not eating that money. They're not going to. He's probably going to be there. And if you're trading him, you're going to have to take a really bad contract back. So you're going to get another maybe bad money for 2 years. I think that they now know that this didn't work out. Donaldson passed his prime. I can tell you that the situation with the Tim Anderson with the White Sox. That didn't sit well in the Yankee clubhouse. I don't think Donaldson is close to players there. I don't think he has close friends. I think he did his best to fit in, not cause a lot of problems. That caused a problem. He has a reputation. And let's face it, on the field stats-wise, he was a big disappointment. He played a pretty good third base. Give him that.
He did.
But you can't have DJ LeMahieu, a $15 million player, be your extra infielder, and Aaron Hicks, a $10 million player, being your extra outfielder. That's $25 million. That's probably more than the Pirates payroll that you have on your bench.
Wow. That's crazy. That's a good point right there. They're going to have to get creative. Maybe they get some picks at least because that's a little less money. Maybe they can attach a prospect or eat some of it. Like, you can't have both of them. I agree. You can't weigh down two roster spots. So hopefully they'll figure something out.
But I'm a check, man. Get your checkbook out. Write $29 million. That way you can buy one less boat this year and you're good.
Yeah, I'm going to have to sell everything I own and get some donations going towards the Get Josh Donaldson Out of Town Fund. I think every fan would be willing to chip in after what we saw at the plate. That was brutal to watch. And the fact
he did get on base. He did have one of the best on base in the postseason. He had some early strikeouts. And Boone was very miffed before game four. He's like, I don't know why that Donaldson is the face of our struggles. And he didn't think that was fair when, look, no one's going to get on Cabrera. What was Cabrera like?
He was bad, but yeah, he's a rookie.
But Stanton didn't do much. Rizzo didn't do a whole, I mean, nobody hit. I thought
Rizzo was pretty decent, but like, I guess compared to like what you needed, it wasn't enough.
Yeah, but they faced the fourth starter was McCullers. Okay, they could hit him. But the first three starters Houston has are better than anything the Yankees have, and that includes Cole and Nestor. And that's no disrespect to Cole and Nestor. Houston's has three number one starters, and they have a bullpen that basically from 6 through 12 or 13 is the best bullpen, 6 through 13 maybe in the game.
Yeah, I mean, Javier buckled them, and he wasn't even starting against the Mariners, and he still came in and buckled them after the no-hitter. Like, they had no answer for that guy. Like, I don't know what they tried to do. It seemed like they just went in blind, didn't even watch any tape on him, and they just kept getting fooled.
He hides the ball so well, and his stuff is so good. It's just not the Yankees didn't watch tape on him. It's nobody's hitting him. It's that good. You can watch, three years ago, you can watch DeGrom for all day and all night. It doesn't mean you're gonna hit him.
Yeah, you know? He gave up like three hits all year to the Yankees, I think, in like 20 innings or something.
Yeah,
maybe less.
I think it might have been one hit. I gave up one hit.
Oh, it was one hit, and then I think we faced him another time somewhere in the middle.
We had a no hitter for seven innings in the playoffs. He gave up one hit. So if he faced him the other time,
I think he gave up one run. He gave up one run all year. So that's probably where I'm getting the other two hits from. I think his ERA was like 0.6 or something, like in 15 innings before, 0.9 before the playoff. Like, it was just a debacle. Like, I checked because like I wanted to see, obviously, but it was ugly to watch. that's for sure. It wasn't great. But let's skip over to this World Series now, since we're getting towards the end. I know you had some Philly ties. So
do you think I live close to Philly, covered them for 16, 17 years. But I'm a native Pittsburgher, so I'm a 70s Pirates fan. My first game was, I think, Forbes Field in 69. Clemente was still there. I'm a 70 Stargills fan. So that said, I did a book on Harry Callis a few years ago. Mike Schmidt did the foreword for my book. I know a lot of the 70s, 80s Phillies. A lot of my friends in this area are Philly fans, and you have to give them credit. They had a heck of a run. I didn't expect them to beat the Braves. I thought the Braves were the best team in the National League this year, and they took them out pretty easily. And Harper, they're riding Harper. They have a magic thing going. And while you look at the Astros and say they're the best team, I thought the Oakland A's were a great team before you were probably born in 1990. And you weren't even born in 1990.
I was negative two.
Oh my God, you're making me feel old. Because I was already like 4 years out of college. But anyway, the Cincinnati Reds had no shot and they swept them. And you've seen that throughout the years at times where, my feeling is if the Astros have not lost a game yet, Nope. If you go in there and you steal, we saw game one of the ALDS, Verlander was hit by Seattle. They came back and won the game. But if somehow you can steal one of those two games, you come home, that home field advantage in Philly. And I was there for all those games in the run, 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11. And now the fans are so charged up. That's a heck of a home field advantage, a tough place to win. I don't see Houston going in there and win three games. I think that Philly could still win it in Houston. If they can, they can go home and possibly win two and go up to Houston and be up 3-2. Is it likely? No, I still think Houston's going to win the series. Again, I think they're one of the best teams in the last 10 years. But that home field advantage, that wave that they're riding, Harper, right now, I think best player in the National League. It's not going to be an easy series for Houston. I can see, if I was making a prediction, I would say Astros in six.
Okay, I actually pretty much agree with what you're saying here. I think the game for them to get is game one, because Justin Verlander is also struggling in the World Series, as we've seen a lot for some reason. His World Series ERA is not good. And we saw him get hit against the Mariners. So the Phillies could get to him, and they could potentially win game one. We also saw him
against the Yankees. And if you don't get him early, nobody for the Yankees had a chance from basic innings 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. So don't go by the past. What happened in the 2017 World Series is not going to matter in 2022. What happened in 2019 series is nothing of 2022. It's Verlander this year was what? 18-4, the 175, something like that. Maybe I think it's not going to be easy to get him. For the most part, he's good 8 out of 9 times. I would expect him to go out there and allow one run over 7 innings.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm feeling the Phillies got some momentum too. Like they got some magic. I think they can maybe strike a home run or two. But you made a good point about the first few innings. We've even seen some of the Yankees before. Like they get that 4 spot on and in that game 5 in 2019 in the first and nothing else. Like you got to get in those first 2 to 3 innings. Otherwise you're done. Like once he gets past that third and beyond, it's game over. As we saw, like that he gets in that mode and you can't touch him.
Well, Houston has a great lineup too. And my feeling is where this series will be run is Houston will get into the Phillies bullpen. That is not nearly as deep as the Astros.
Yeah.
And also the rotation for the Phillies is not nearly as deep as the Astros.
Once you get past the top two, yeah.
Wheeler and Nola, and then it's, there used to be an old saying back in the day, even before my time with the Milwaukee Braves, it was Spawn Sane and Pray for Rain.
Yeah.
Donnie Sane and Warren Spawn.
I've heard that one before.
The Phillies, you got Wheeler and Nola, and then, boy, Crapola.
Yeah, I mean, Syndergaard is starting game 4. It's a minute Syndergaard. Suarez is all right, but he's not a primetime pitcher yet compared to what the Astros have. I mean, I think it's going to be a fun series. I think it'll be interesting. But I think to your point, I can see it like this. The Astros either win in 4 or 5 or Phillies do like 6 or 7. I think if the Astros win, it's going to be clean. But if the Phillies can get some momentum, like win a game in Houston, I think they could have a chance, especially with that home crowd, like you were saying.
If the Phillies win, it's going to go 7 games.
Yeah.
Maybe like Arizona and the Yankees in 2001, but then again, Arizona had the foam filled there. It's like I was in Houston for the postseason. I was there for the regular season. That's not an easy place to play either.
We can't play. Yankees can't play at all there.
Well, they have seasoned guys. And the one thing, look, we've been talking for how long? What never came up is there's no questions that this team is legit. Whatever the Astros did in 17, maybe in 19, this team, nobody's saying they cheated and they're the best team. And to me, that substantiates a little bit of that, this Astros era. And they've been to the NLCS or ALCS every year since 17.
Yep.
This is their third World Series appearance, right?
It's going to be four now. They lost
fourth World Series appearance.
The one thing is that they've lost to all NL East teams and they beat the Dodgers. So this is their third NL East team.
And you think that means something?
I'm trying to spin a track because
I'm Altuve right now saying, "Damn it! Why couldn't have been?
I'm trying to spin the trend towards the Phillies' favor. I'm grasping the straws here. I'm trying to get anything I can. But we'll see what ends up happening.
Well, the Phillies are going to be a tough out. They're riding a pretty good wave right now. But that said, they're going up against a hell of a juggernaut. Experienced team with great pitching, great relief pitching, a good lineup, sluggers, singles hitters, smart team, field well. That's a managed well. They're going to be a tough out. And by the way, what a job Rob Thompson has done with the Phillies. I didn't expect that. I think Rob was there my first 2 years covering the Yankees. My first year was 16. Quiet guy, nice guy. I'm amazed that from day one, would they go on a streak of 7 in a row, something like that?
Yeah, he took over and they just hit it.
And they kept it going. So kudos to Rob for a great job that he did taking over for Girardi, who I hear was not well liked there. They grew tired of him.
And the thing, a couple of things with this, I would say Rob Thompson got a 2-year extension too, which he obviously deserves now. So that's good that they're going to see that through with him. Obviously gets the World Series. I think it's a bad indictment on Girardi, though, like really bad indictment on him, like how much better it got when he left, because they didn't even make that many transitions, really. It was like minor tweaking. Like it was nothing too crazy of a trade they made. But do you think Girardi's done? Do you think anyone will take a shot, or do you think it's over for him?
He still won a World Series in New York. He's still not old. I think nowadays the most important thing that a manager brings is a clubhouse and dugout presence. And Girardi is a little old school. He can be tough with guys. Not the communication isn't nearly as good as Rob Thompson or Aaron Boone. I think Aaron Boone gets a very unfair shake, because I look at fans get on him a lot for these moves. And I think that a lot of these moves are analytics driven.
I agree.
He has to, when he got this job with no experience, he's told, well, this is a big part of the organization. That doesn't mean he can't do anything on his own. But I think a lot of the moves that are done are what he's supposed to do. And he takes the hit, and the players play hard for him. There's guys that don't, Torres doesn't run all the time. The old days, you could pull him out of the game and sit him down. You can't do that nowadays. So I remember in Chicago in 17, after a bad game with Sanchez, Girardi was talking to the media after the game in his visiting office and said, look, he's got to improve in this era. He's got to get better at blocking balls. And it was not vicious criticism. And I heard that Cashman was like, that was the final straw. We can't have that. We have to support and cuddle these guys. And Boone does that. If he does any yelling or anything tough, it's behind closed doors. We don't see it. And I know fans are like, I want to see him flip over tables. You can't do that now. I was a beat writer with the Phillies when Larry Bowe was the manager. And I remember a game in Montreal waiting to get in the locker room at the old Olympic Stadium. And you hear stuff flying, and we go in the room and there's tables, food all over the floor. And players afterwards, and we were, when I left, I think we had a quick getaway to go somewhere. And I was actually in line at the Montreal airport to go through customs, and the Phillies were there. And I remember some Philly players like just laughing at Boa, like what an idiot. And you can't do that nowadays. You lose respect. And Boone has incredible respect. Rizzo, I talked to Rizzo about Boone after the game. He's like, he's the commander of our ship. They adore this guy. And Judge really, really loves Boone. So again, I think I get emails all the time. Boone's terrible. We got to go. And I don't know that these are all his calls.
I agree with you. I'm not the biggest fan personally, because it's just like, I don't know.
You like about him?
It's just like the way things come off. Like, I just don't see the urgency, really. I mean, you probably see it more than I do.
Urgency? Give me one, for instance.
Like, it's just like, he makes these comments like, we're up against him, we're down 3-0 and stuff like that. And then you have the debacle with like Ortiz and like whatever they end up doing with like that 3-0 motivational thing. Although that's not fully on him. But that's, I don't know. Him.
I don't know what you want him to say there, but he knows the players hear this. It's the tone that he sets. The players are relaxed, and you have to do that nowadays. These players, they have to have days off. The players nowadays the agents are involved in how many pitches they're thrown, how many times they're warmed up. You know, what they did with Peralta, you can't do in letting him pitch 3 days in a row or whatever it was with a lot of pitches. You can't do that now. The agents and the money in the game, they have a lot of say in how players are used, days off. And while Boone has some say in this, again, I think a lot of this fan criticism is stuff that he's doing what he's instructed to do. And from what I was told, there's about three managers in the game that can do what they want. Terry Francona is one. La Russa was one. And Dusty probably, Dusty Baker has more say than others. But, and Bochy now that he's come back with the Rangers. But Girardi with the Phillies, he didn't have complete say over what was going on. But the mood of the clubhouse after losses, the mood in the dugout when things are going wrong, the mood that Boone sets is different from Girardi. And allows players to relax, which is important to them and important to Boone's bosses and certainly Hal Steinbrenner. And that's a reason why he's still here and a reason why I think for what Boone's up against and what he's allowed to do, I think he's doing a good job.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that too, because I do know that he doesn't make all decisions. I've figured that out too. Like I know it's a lot of front office stuff and he kind of has to go by what they put down and everything. It's just like, I feel like he could end up being the fall guy, like you said, in the situation with Judge if he leaves. Like, they need to appease the fan base, and they could throw the fan base a bone, like you said. And because Cashman's not going anywhere, obviously. He's in this organization as long as he wants, probably. Unless, like, something unforeseen happens.
That's what I hear. I think Hal Steinbrenner is very comfortable with Cashman. Hal's not the baseball guy that his dad was. He's never going to be a de facto GM, and there's a lot of trust, friendship there that Cashman has to go to Hal for any big moves that they recommend, and Hal thinks it over and says yes or no. So a lot of the, I believe Cashman isn't at fault for Verlander, because Hal that year wanted to that's why they got under it. And then once they were under that for the year, they're setting a new clock for luxury tax. And then they go out and get Stanton, which I think was just a terrible move. And again, that's no disrespect to Stanton, but to me, the way to win was to add pitching, and they waited too long to get Cole. And now you better get somebody else with Cole. And let's face it, right now, the jury's still out on Cole being a Yankee superstar. Good pitcher, really good pitcher, but he hasn't had his huge moment yet.
Right. He's been above average. He's been bordering great, but not fully. Not like he hasn't won a World Series yet. He hasn't won a Cy Young. Like he needs to do one of those two things to solidify the contract. And we'll see if he ends up doing that. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't like the structure. It just hasn't been working well. Like, they just make the playoffs. They don't get all the way through. It seems like they're satisfied with just making it these days. Like, it's not the same mission.
Don't underestimate that, though. That's sounds a little bit like a spoiled fan that you expect to get there. And keep in mind that this run the Yankees are on now of no losing season since 91 or number 92, never been done in the history of sports, in any sports. When you look at that, they make the playoffs every year. It's not easy. They're in a tough division. I know watered down now with three teams making it, but
they still want it. So
look at the Red Sox this year. You know, the Red Sox are another superpower. They didn't make it. I know they won three World Series since 2004, and the Yankees have won none. Kudos to them. But that said, they've had to blow it up at times, and the Yankees have refused to blow it up. And I think Yankee fans would accept a rebuild if you have young, exciting kids that you can watch grow. And as long as you know, like, to me, save this money that you have until you're ready to win, and then go get the guys rather than go get some old guys now that are going to get you just in the playoffs and you're going to fall short again. Because I don't think there's anything the Yankees can do this winter that will make them match the Astros.
That's the ultimate question, that how can they get past them? That's one we've been asking for 6 years, and the answer still isn't there. We've tried.
They got worse, not to get better. I know. They're backwards. Not as good as they were in 17. Yeah, they're backwards. Not as good as they were in 19.
And that's,
Tampa Bay Rays have been as good as organization with 1/10 of the payroll, or whatever it is.
Yeah, and the Boone's been here the whole time, which is, I mean, it's not his fault, but he's been here for all of it as they've gone backwards.
He made the playoffs every year. And look at the Atlanta Braves. The Braves won 14 division titles in a row from whatever it was, 1993.
One World Series.
They had three Hall of Famers. I remember talking to John Schuerholz over, I think it was over at dinner. And it might have been in Atlanta one time. And wherever it was, he said to me, I think it's tougher to get to the playoffs 14 years in a row than to get to the playoffs six times and win three World Series, because the playoffs, it's who gets hot. Look at last year, you know, who the Braves get hot. They look like they weren't even a playoff team. Okay, they win it all. The Yankees were a better team. So yeah. It's comes down to, if you get in, you have a shot. Look at the Phillies. The Phillies the Braves were the last two seeds in the National League, and they were the last two teams standing in the National League. So if you get in, and I think Yankee fans, they just don't appreciate that they make the playoffs damn near every year and have a shot every year, and because they haven't, because we're the Yankees. And you look at the 27 World Series championships, and a lot of those championships came in the Ruth and DiMaggio era and the Mantle era, when there was no competition. The Yankees could outspend whatever they wanted, which was minuscule to today's money. Yeah. But you, like, with the Yankees, that shows you what the Yankees did in that Jeter era was amazing. The Giants winning three, whatever, they won three in a 5-year span, or
yeah, it's 5 years there. Yeah,
so I mean, what the Astros are doing now, amazing. But the Yankees are there every year, so don't until you end up, hey, I grew up in Pittsburgh, in when I was a kid, the Pirates made the playoffs in 70, won the World Series in 71, made the playoffs in 72, 74, 75, 79. And then all of a sudden, you have 3 years with Bonds, and they've had three winning seasons since. So I was spoiled. I went to Pitt. I was there when their heyday with Tony Dorsett and through the Marino years. Now I'm like, why can't it go back to the way it was? And I'm always down in the program. And last year when Pitt football went to the Peach Bowl as ACC champs, I was like, this isn't what it was in the Marino era. It was hard for me to follow. They lost to, I think, Eastern Michigan last year. So I get that I'm judging the Pirates by what it was as a kid for me. I'm judging Pitt football on what it was when I was in high school or junior high school through college. And Yankee fans are judging the Yankees based on past generations instead of appreciating that in this era where there's luxury tax, and I know Yankee fans don't want to hear it, the Steinbrenners are billionaires, it's still a business. Yeah. And they do enough that they're basically a first or second place team every year. They make the playoffs every year, and it's very few years where there's a superpower on what the Astros have this year that you say, boy, we can't beat this team. But that said, appreciate what you have here, because you could be in a different market where you have a look at Philadelphia. Philly is a big market, and this was their first winning season, I think, since the last playoff team in 2011, I think it was. So there's a huge market where they have big money guy in Harper. They've had big spending. They locked up their guys back in the day, Rollins, Utley, Howard, Hamels, couldn't even get back to the playoffs. So I think that Yankee fans should sit back for a moment and say, hey, it stings. I want to win a World Series again. I want to get back to the World Series again, but it's nice that the organization does enough that there's no 70 and 92 seasons here. And they're it's like that everywhere else.
Yeah, I never saw 70 and 92. That's why when I was small, I was like too young to appreciate the 4 and 5, unfortunately. But I was here for it. So, yeah, I mean, the Red Sox are an interesting one, because, like, it's either, like, they're really good or really bad. There's no in between. Like, they finished in last more than anyone else, I think, or, like, just about the same time as Baltimore in that span, because they bottom out. They see the top and they bottom. They've had three good runs. But overall, the Yankees have definitely been better if you take out the championships. Like, the record, I'm sure, is much better for the Yankees over that stretch. So I see what you're saying with that.
Yeah, they won 99 games this year. won their division by 8.5 games, and you would think they had a terrible year.
Yeah, it's just because they're getting everyone's tired of losing to the Astros. They just feel like it was a dissatisfying ending again. And especially how it's a place, like you were saying, like if it was 17 or 19, I think we'd be feeling a little better about it, but it wasn't even close, like you said.
Well, they still have a lot of money, and I'm sure that it won't be long before once they figure out what happens to Judge, they'll come up with a plan B, and whether it's next year or the year after, they're going to be right in there very soon again with a chance to win the World Series. And when you get in, you got a chance. And I think that you have to like that they tried to go for it this year. It's not their fault that Benintendi got hurt. You never expected Efros to have Tommy John. You know, who knows if they were healthy. They certainly would have had a better chance against the Astros. They would not have been swept. Maybe it goes 6 games.
Yeah.
A lot of luck involved in baseball. Maybe they get a couple. I mean, there was one game early on to the Astros where I think it might have been Verlander early on when they were hitting ropes behind second, you know, because of the shift right at them.
Yeah. You know, they got Valdez good early too, and they couldn't do anything. That was game. I remember that one too.
Yeah.
Judge missed by a few feet, but I do think that they did actually try to change the home run or bust mentality with DJ, Benny, and IKF. Like, it would have been a little bit different if you added those two, like you said. But without them, it was what we've seen in the last 13 years. It's either a homer or you're not doing anything else, basically. And the home runs were done. I mean, Harrison Bader was the best hitter. And as you said, Bader is streaky. He wasn't supposed to be their best hitter. I mean, hats off to Bader for a great postseason. But I'm not expecting a 30 and 100 from him next year when he rolls into spring training. Like, that's ridiculous. Maybe he could get, like, 15 and 20, though, get, like, 70 to 75 ribbies, steal, like, 25 bases. Like, that'd be good, play a good center field. Like, I'm fine with that.
Sure, but that would be the best year of his life by far.
Yeah, well.
And that's could he do it? Maybe. I mean, he's still a young player. I like Bader. And I know you mentioned the Montgomery thing, but what you didn't mention is that those fastballs that Montgomery's last 4 or 5 starts, he kind of fell off a little bit. He had a great stretch early on, but it did not sustain.
Like, I'm not upset they traded Montgomery. Like, I'm okay with dealing him. Like, I just think they could have used him more effectively maybe a little bit. But and he did get caught on to a little bit with the Cardinals. I think it's a better partner for pitchers too. Easier division. Like, there's a few things weighing with it. I get it. And then the last thing I'm going to ask you, this is an interesting question about the Astros. Has there ever been a team in the modern era that's just won every single playoff game? Because if they sweep, like, I think it's an historic run. I don't think I've ever seen that in, like, the new format. I know back in the day it used to be, like, just one series or two series, so probably happened back then.
It happened with, the modern era is the 70s and 80s. And I remember the 76 Reds swept the Phillies and then swept the Yankees, so they won 7 in a row. Maybe it happened in basketball once. I don't think they're going to sweep again, but yeah, that said, they have a chance to do something that's very, very special. And they're a very special team. And I know Yankee fans hate them because of 17-19 and Altuve's publicly enemy number one in New York. Now he's still a great player. I'm a Hall of Fame voter. I'll never vote for Altuve because of the cheating. I'm not going to vote any of those guys. I don't care what he does. He gets 3,000 hits. I have questions whether he was wearing a buzzer in 19. I still suspicious he's come running at home plate. No.
And the tattoo whore deal. Oh, yeah, I still question the locker room that too.
T-shirt
yeah.
on. Yeah, I didn't want my wife to see me.
Yeah, it was okay that too.
When he hit the walk-off homer off of Chad Green in 2 years ago, and he was running right around holding a shirt. I guess it was okay that the wife saw his chest at that
point. Well, I remember Judge and Sanchez were doing like the wire thing the one time they hit a homer against Houston, I think, or something like that. It was
makes for good rivalry.
I remember that.
That adds fun. It comes down to it. Sports is entertainment, and Astros Yankees is fun. It's a shame that it wasn't a more fun series this year.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But if they end up sweeping, I know that's never been done in like the division series format. That would be crazy. I think that Phillies at least get one. They at least have one of them. But if they somehow sweep them, then we're looking at one of the best teams ever, like you said.
Yep, I agree.
So, Ramsey, thank you. This was a fun addition. You forgot your Abe Lincoln hat, though. I was expecting
you're the
Abe
one.
Lincoln hat.
I told you this guy has the biggest collection of Abe Lincoln hats, and you didn't put one on. you know, you're promoting your show. Next time, I want that Abe Lincoln hat on there.
Well, I just had to say, it's not ready. I'm not ready for Halloween yet. I've waited a few more days for a big surprise. And we still got a few more days. So I didn't want to reveal anything. I should have, just like you, you know, we got secrets out here.
I have, probably before your time, if you remember All in the Family, the TV show, back in the 70s, it was the top rated show. And Archie Bunker was a guy that wore these top hats. And Archie Bunker, and it reminds me of a kid of when I used to go to my grandparents on the weekends. And when I was leaving to go home on Sunday night, and I loved going to my grandparents every weekend, Friday, Sunday, and I would go home Sunday at 8 o'clock, and that's when All in the Family came on. It was always sad to me that I had to go back and go to school and leave my grandparents, who I end up living with. But in my house, Archie Bunker's chair from All in the Family is in the Smithsonian, and I have his hat.
Oh, wow. That's really something.
Remind me, and I'll wear Archie Bunker's hat next time.
All right. Yeah, we may have a few this off season. We're gonna have a long off season. We've got a lot of stuff we gotta get done. Baseball's ending, unfortunately. Now I do have a question. I'll probably edit this part out, but I could just ask. It doesn't matter. I'll just ask. Are you going to the winter meetings?
Brendan Cuddy is going to the winter meetings from NJ.com. I am on vacation that week. I have some time off, and I'm hoping next the weekend after, I guess it will be game 6 and 7 of the World Series. I have a trip planned to, I'm hoping to go see Alabama at LSU, play some college football, which I've had planned. I'm a big college football fan. My Pitt Panthers, as I mentioned, gave up football. They stink. So I jumped in the bandwagon, became an Alabama fan. Oh, that God. Said, my buddy, who's a lawyer in Baton Rouge, has 16 season tickets, has invited me down, and I'll be on like the 40-yard line, and I'll probably have to, with LSU fans, and I probably will have to just play it cool, but which is fine, because when you're in a press box at games, you're used to just, that's the one thing about being a sports writer, is that it takes the fan away from you.
Yeah.
That you're so used to just, and honestly, I've been a sports writer since 1979, when I was 15 years old, and the best, I've been to probably 8 Super Bowls as a fan, 4 Steelers, my team, I grew up, and I've been to 15 World Series, been to Stanley Cup Finals, and many Penguin playoff, I'm a big Pittsburgh Penguins fan, many games as a kid, and the best sporting event I ever went in my life was, and I got to cheer and be a part of it, was last December, I went to Newcastle United at Liverpool, soccer game at Liverpool.
Oh, wow.
And it was the being a part of, in the crowd behind the goal where they're singing the entire time and have like 30 different songs or 50 different songs. And I sat next to the guy that starts the singing, a guy who had missed, a guy said he made $30,000 a year and he'd missed 7 games in 27 years, home and away, and probably went to 100 games in different countries. And to see the passion there, it's like you see what it's like at a Yankee Stadium postseason game. You see what it's like at a World Series game there, or what it's going to be like in Philadelphia for the World Series, or what it's like for some college football games. If you go to, I've been to a game at Ohio State, I've been to Clemson, I've been to Notre Dame. It's not even close to what the Premier League soccer is.
Wow.
It's not even close. And that's no disrespect to what it's like in Yankee fan. Yankee Stadium, because it's crazy. Yankee Stadium, not even close to what the soccer. So I will watch Liverpool stinks this year based on their standards. You know, now I'm like, you know, expecting to win every game. But that said, I'm hoping maybe I'll go back to see Liverpool again. But it was just, it's amazing to see the passion. And I hear from talking to Latino players that the games in the Winter League games where they have, they're banging on the pots and singing the songs and stuff, is it's not like soccer, but it's different from what it is in the U.S.
Yeah, I like the Spanish baseball leagues during the winter. Like, I'll watch some Dominican fall ball winter to pass the time, see what's going on. Some Yankees end up playing there too sometimes, and then some minor league guys. But I've never been to Europe. That'd be interesting. I wanted to put that on the bucket list, do some more travel and get out there. But the press box, I will say, it's very tough for me to be in there sometimes. Like, I want to get excited and like show some emotion, but you just have to sit there. It's like, okay.
Like, you see, when you get older, growing up in the 70s in Pittsburgh, I was a huge Steeler fan, lived 25 miles away. I remember Super Bowl 14 in 1978, and I'm 25 miles from Pittsburgh, and on my street, and I grew up in a old part of Gannett, PA, there's probably 20 houses on my street both ways, and there was like 17 houses had homemade banners up made out of bed sheets for the Steelers, 26 miles away. So then all of a sudden I'm flying on the Steeler team plane in 92-93. And it's different. You see when you're covering the team that when you're working with players every day, that it's not like there's just not a starstruck feeling anymore. You know, when I'm with Aaron Judge every day, it's you need him for work-wise, or you're in a clubhouse for an hour before the game and you're building relationships, and you might be talking to a guy who's down on his luck that just might need somebody to talk to, and you might turn out to be Dr. Phil to a couple players that I was like that with Gallo this year, and I was like that with Connor Fluff at times this year, and just listen to him when they're down, and you build these relationships, and it becomes definitely more professional, where there's no fan in you when you're a beat writer. You root for the good story. You understand who your fan base is. You know, I was not a Philly fan growing up, certainly growing up in Pittsburgh, but when they won the World Series, I knew what it meant for friends of mine in the area and what it meant for the readers. So you embraced it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to the Mets game was cool too. And I've done Marlins in the MLB box. We're trying to push for Yankees next year. I'll have them keep you posted if I could get through. That'd be awesome. Might be doing some WBC stuff, hopefully. So we'll see what happens with that. I'm going to have a funny thought. Yeah, we should make a fun press box where people can cheer. Like, imagine a fans press box.
You cheer in a press box, you're going to get some dirty looks. I think the only time I ever saw cheering in the press box was WVU, West Virginia football, and people were cheering. And, man, the other people wanted to throw them out. It's like, you know what? You're going to be a fanboy? Get out of the press box.
No, I would never cheer there. It's just a funny thought. No,
I'm just saying that's the only time I saw it.
No, I'm actually happy you mentioned that, because I haven't seen it, obviously, because I haven't had that much experience yet. It's just like, obviously it's a big no, though. It would just be funny if you were, I just imagine you were able to, like, how wild it would be.
If you do this long enough, you will lose. I promise you, you will lose being a fan, and it will be a job, and you will look for the good story. And it's never the same when you start covering.
Once I cross that line, yeah.
It's never the same. And you,
yeah, I haven't just crossed it yet.
You lose your allegiance. And then when there's players that you look up to coming into it, that might not be that friendly to you, or you see being a jerk, and you just, you know, when they have a bad game, you're like, all right, you know, you deserve that. And it becomes much more of a job. That said, you know, like I mentioned Liverpool soccer. Kyle Higashioka is a big Liverpool soccer fan. I love my talks. Higgy and I talk Liverpool soccer a lot. And it's fun. So I like the relationships that you build. And I've had a lot of heart-to-hearts with Kiner. I've had a lot of great talks with Garrett Cole, and it's fun to pick their minds. I won't reveal what I voted, but I had a Cy Young vote this year. And before I went to my Cy Young, I went to some players. I went to Cole. Cole was joking, oh, you're not voting for me. Okay, jokingly. But I wanted to say, tell me who you think was the best. Who would you put in the second, third, fourth, fifth? Here's the stats. What do you think? Went to some hitters for the Yankees. Tell me what you think. So they're the guys that watch them, that face them. And it's fun to just have an off the record conversation that they feel that they can trust me to tell me what they really think, that I weigh into factors in my vote.
Right. That's a good thing, to get content off the record that you can use, and you don't have to say where it came from. And I know the players, they watch the other players. Like, people are like, oh, Judge should be MVP. Like, a lot of people are like in the game, like, oh, he earned it this year. Like, I feel like they pay attention more than people realize sometimes, like the things like that.
And Judge is going to be MVP.
Well, yeah. I mean, he should.
Some people look at Ohtani and Ohtani had a great year, but what place did they come in? How many playoff games did they win?
Zero and last or fourth. You know,
I did a story a couple of days after the playoffs on Anthony Rizzo with Judge, and he said that Judge gave them 40 wins this year.
I saw that.
So where would we be without Judge? And I looked it up, and That means the Yankees would have been a 59-win worst team in the National and American League without. Now, that's exaggerating. Yeah, it's not a 40 war.
That's a little hyperbole.
But I'm not a big war guy. I like the OPS. I think war is, I'm more in the Rizzo corner than the war, which had Judge at, I think, 11 this year. And I look at it as even a manager, when Jim Leland went to the Marlins, I said, he's going to give them 15 more wins. When you get a Hall of Fame manager, a great manager, as opposed to somebody else, I think a manager can have a huge factor in wins and losses. And I think that Judge didn't give them 40 wins, but it's probably closer to 25 than 11 or 30. I think he was that important to the Yankees this year. And when you factor in stats, clubhouse leadership, the defense, the protection of the lineup to the other guys around them, the fear factor of Judge, which gets other players pitches to hit, it's probably not 40, but without Judge, there's certainly not a 99 win team.
Yeah, to me, like, it's tough to actually factor war, because what you have every player's up, like, does it equal 99? No, it probably doesn't. So, like, it's very flawed if you look at it that way. I mean, I think he's good for at least 15 to 20. That might be conservative, honestly. Like, I think 15 to 20 is, like, the lowest you could say he's good for, honestly. Maybe realistically, like, 25. Maybe I would settle at 25-ish somewhere. Like, somewhere in that 20 to 25 range, I think. I mean, 40 and 30 is, like, unspeakable numbers, but he was that good. Like, he was the entire offense for a while. The leadership in the defense, like you talked about, 100% MVP, no questions.
I agree.
So, all right, Randy, this was awesome. Got a lot of good talks in here. Let everyone know where they can find you.
I'm at NJ.com. I'm on Twitter at Randy J. Miller, R-A-N-D-Y J. Miller. And our stuff, if you go to the Yankees site on NJ.com, Brendan Cuddy and I are the Yankee beat writers. Bob Clappich is our columnist. We think we have a pretty good team there of three baseball writers. And Brendan and I both have some time off in the winter. We'll be kind of alternating weeks back and forth, but we'll be updating a lot of hot stove stuff and certainly be following the Aaron Judge situation and all the other moves the Yankees could and won't make. And it as always, baseball is a 12-month sport now. It's going to be a fun offseason to see what happens with the Yankees and elsewhere.
Yeah, I fully vouch for Randy, and the NJ.com team is great. You guys got that insider text program I also recommend. You guys be shooting out some good information for us, giving us some good little tidbits on what's going on. So that's always appreciated as well.
Don't forget to give me your Venmo, because I know I, how much are you for saying that? $50? I have to send you for saying that nice stuff?
Yeah, maybe 100, actually.
100?
Yeah, I think we're going up now. I mean, I had to pay you to come on the show, so maybe we can call it even.
Really? Okay.
Serious though, everyone.
I just want to see that Abe Lincoln hat that you got. I just can't wait to see that.
Right, next time, you know, we got to keep people interested. You know, we got to just keep. We'll build on it. It'll be like chapters.
You told me you got a cowboy hat. You bought it at the Houston airport. Where's that? Bring it out.
Yeah.
Is it in your room there?
Yeah, it is in here.
Grab
somewhere.
It real quick.
All right. You want to see a bunch of things going on here. And we have a lot of fun off-season content. Randy's going to be a nice beginning for our start of all these interviews we're doing with all these people, hopefully. So we already got some good tidbits on Judge. Even got some surprising news about Otani and a few other things. So we'll see how everything plays out.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. We'll be talking. I appreciate you.